This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Your grain futures on the Chicago Board of Trade were lower across the board on Tuesday. September corn was a penny and a quarter cent lower to 404. December corn was 2 1/4 cents lower to 412.5. And March of next year, corn was 3.5 cents lower to 422. August soybeans were 2.5 cents lower to 847.75. September beans were 3 cents lower to 853. And November beans were 3 cents lower as well on Tuesday to 865.75. Chicago wheat for September was 10.5 cents lower to 484. December wheat was 7 cents lower to 487.75. And March wheat was 7.75 cents lower to 496. Bean meal for August was 20 cents higher to 295.10. September bean meal was 30 cents higher to 297.30. And October bean meal was 40 cents higher to 299.20. Finally, soybean oil for August was 28 cents lower on Tuesday to 27.48. September bean oil finished 31 cents lower to 27.56. And October bean oil was 32 cents lower to 27.68. And now to recap the grain markets, corn was a penny and a quarter to 3.5 cents lower, beans were 2.5 to 3 cents lower, wheat was 7 to 10.5 cents lower, bean meal was anywhere from 20 to 40 cents higher, and soybean oil was 28 to 32 cents lower. And now we'll take you to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Tuesday's cash grain report.
This is Tuesday's port grain price and trend prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were lower on Tuesday afternoon. Yesterday's crop progress report had Illinois corn 42% good to excellent. Nationwide corn was 57% good to excellent, but last week it was 58% good to excellent. Soybeans in Illinois were 42% good to excellent, while nationwide they were 54% good to excellent, and last week they were also 54% good to excellent. In northern West Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 1 to 2 cents lower at 366 to 404. Soybean bids were down 3 to 7 at 780 to 807. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 3 cents lower at 389 to 414. Soybean bids were 1 to 3 lower at 803 to 849. And in the southern part of the state, shell corn bids 1 to 4 cents lower at 348 to 436. Soybean bids were down 3 to 4 cents at 806 to 838. And wheat bids were 11 cents lower, 444 to 484. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 3 to 5 lower at 824 to 861. Basis is steady to down 2 at 4200 to 5 under the November. High pro soy meal on a truck basis was offered at 298.30 to 302.30, up 30 cents a ton, with basis unchanged at 800 to 5 over the September. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids down a penny at 419 to 432, while basis unchanged at 15 over to 28 over the September. Illinois River barge loading elevators quoted a producer corn bid steady to a penny lower at 369 to 404, while basis unchanged to up one at 3500 option to September. Soybeans ended down a penny at 815 to 824, while basis up two at 5100 to 42 under the November. New crop wheat prices were 11 cents lower at 434 to 452, while basis steady at 50 under to 32 under the September. East St. Louis barge loading terminal placed their producer corn bids mixed 391 to 394. These elevators lowered their soybean prices 3 cents, quotations at 836 to 838. So if wheat closed down 11 cents at 484 to 489, Milo ended the day a penny lower at 484 to 449. And contract bids producers for October-November delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 360 to 402, soybeans at 796 to 837. In the central part of the state, corn for October-November delivery at 385 to 406, soybeans at 808 to 851. And in the southern part of the state, corn for October-November delivery at 352 to 425, soybeans at 801 to 834. And that concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Your livestock futures Tuesday finished mixed, but mostly lower. Starting off in live cattle for August, that contract traded 67 cents lower to 107.12. October live cattle were $1.17 lower to 106.22. And December live cattle were $1 lower to $110.90. August feeders were 55 cents lower to $139.97. September feeders finished 5 cents higher to $139.45. And October feeder cattle finished 22 cents higher to $138.65. Finally, August lean hogs were 72 cents lower to $77.12. October lean hogs finished $2.82 higher to $64.60. And December lean hogs were $1.17 lower to $61.02. Now to recap your livestock futures from Tuesday, live cattle finished anywhere from $1.17 to $0.67 lower. Feeder cattle finished from 55 cents lower to 22 cents higher. And lean hogs were in a range of $0.72 to $2.82 lower. Now we'll take you to the Department of Agriculture once more on this Wednesday morning for yesterday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Tuesday afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound pork carcass traded 94 cents lower, in a range of $65 to $80 with the weighted average carcass price of $75.22. In the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow price was steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded 30 to 36, 4 to 5 weighted 32 to 40, 5 to 6 weighted 34 to 44, and over 600 pounds 35 to $46. In the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were weak with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $48 to $53. Receipts for Illinois barrels and gilts have totaled $21,360. In the direct cattle trade, the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers on dress basis traded at $180 to $185. Choice heifers on dress basis traded at $185. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 347 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was $88.73, which is 60 cents higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading higher. Choice carcasses were $215.78, which is $1.08 higher, while select carcasses were $196.65, which is $1.98 higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 118,000 compared to 117,000 last week, 119,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 477,000 compared to 470,000 last week and 455,000 one year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And in Ag News for part two of your Wednesday morning Ag Show, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement worth billions of dollars in expected new U.S. farm exports now faces a long congressional recess and narrow window for still uncertain action in September. American Farm Bureau trade advisor Dave Salmonson says negotiations will continue this month on Democrats' call for tougher enforcement of labor and environmental standards.
I think a lot of course, depends on how these talks go, the negotiations between the group that Speaker Pelosi appointed and USTR, again, directly with Ambassador Lighthizer.
Lighthizer has reportedly built trust with the Speaker and Democrats, and differences are said to be narrowing.
If they can come to some accommodations, agree on an implementing bill, then I think they can move it, and September would be good.
However, farm and other groups are not waiting, spending time now to lobby Democrats in the House, where action must start. The coalition Trade Works for America, formed by Vice President Pence's chief of staff, plans to spend $8 million this month in more than 50 House districts, many held by Democrats. Separately, Salmonson says President Trump could still withdraw plans for a new 10% tariff on all remaining untaxed Chinese exports to the United States.
This whole process started in June and then was halted. So this is redoing what had begun back in June.
And unlike the difficult China talks, trade talks with Japan, a huge but threatened U.S. market, may now speed up based on a recent agreement. Trade war worries sent Wall Street retreating on Monday as some experts fear the rest of the U.S. could join the ag economy in a depressed economy. Experts from Morgan Stanley predict a global recession if the trade war escalates through Trump's threatened additional 25% tariffs upon China. Trump intends to implement 10% of the tariffs next month. the cause for China's stoppage of U.S. ag purchases Monday and devaluing its currency. Trump accused China of using the devaluation of its currency to retaliate against the United States, but China's central bank denied it made the move as an intentional response to the trade war. China still plans to retaliate against the United States tariffs that will start September 1. Morgan Stanley representatives told CNBC on Monday the firm believes a global recession will come in about 9 months if the trade war further escalates. U.S. negotiators met with Chinese officials late last month and plan an additional round of talks at the beginning of September. Antibiotic resistance is an increasing challenge for public health officials as they work to address the issue for both humans and animals. The National Institute for Animal Agriculture encourages a One Health solution by bringing professionals together from both sides. In this report from the National Institute of Animal Agriculture, with support from Merck Animal Health, we learn about work from the Food and Drug Administration's Center for Veterinary Medicine to keep antibiotics effective longer. Crystal Albers has the report.
Antibiotics use consistently ranks among top food concerns of U.S. consumers. While most may be unfounded, entities from farm groups to regulatory agencies continue to promote good antibiotic stewardship and responsible use in food animals. A December report showed a 33% decrease from 2016 to 2017 in domestic sales and distribution of all medically important antibiotics used in food animal production. This progress suggests that increased understanding of proper antibiotics use is having a positive impact.
We think some important progress has been made with some strategies, a strategy we completed in January of 2017, where we resulted in, worked with the pharmaceutical industry, with animal producer groups, the feed industry, the veterinary community, to bring about some changes to how medically important antibiotics are used in animal agriculture.
The FDA plans to continue that momentum in its five-year plan to reduce antibiotic resistance, taking what Flynn calls a One Health approach. He spoke at the National Institute for Animal Agriculture's Antibiotics Symposium last fall.
We are sort of broadening the scope a bit. I think the efforts that we've focused on to date have been largely focused on antibiotics that are used in the animal agriculture setting, so in food-producing animals. There's general agreement that this really is sort of a One Health issue. We need to look at this issue of antimicrobial resistance in a sort of a One Health through a One Health lens, because it really is contributed by uses in all different sectors, whether it's human health care or any animal health area where antibiotics are being used. So I think one of the things we've included in this five-year plan is also turning our attention to pets or companion animals.
The agency's plans also call for improvements in how antibiotic use and resistance are monitored for livestock and companion animals.
Clearly the challenge here is that it isn't just an animal issue. It's a human issue. It's an animal issue. It's an issue where antibiotics are being used. Many of us have pets at home. We have a lot of close contact with our pets. Our pets get sick. Our pets need to be treated with antibiotics. I think most folks understand that, but there's the risk that there are risks that resistance can emerge, you know, in your pet.
You can hear more from Flynn during the National Institute for Animal Agriculture's Antibiotics Symposium this fall. It takes place October 15th through 17th at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa. Visit animalagriculture.org to learn more or to register. Reporting for NIAA, I'm Crystal Albers.
Thank you, Crystal. And again, you can learn more at animalagriculture.org. Moving on now to national crop news. Farmers report a significant decline in corn and soybean plantings in the 2019 annual Farm Futures Crop Production Survey. Farm Futures announced the findings on Monday, noting that farmers planted 83.5 million acres of corn this year, which is the lowest acreage since 2006. Meanwhile, estimated soybean acreage is down 15.3 million acres, or 9% from last year, to 79.6 million acres. The latest estimates from the Department of Agriculture predicted corn production at 14.42 billion bushels on 89.1 million acres. Farm futures estimated the corn yield at 167.2 bushels to the acre, totaling a 12.7 billion bushel crop, or the smallest since the drought of 2012. Soybean yield is estimated at 48.4 bushels to the acre, with total production of 3.8 billion bushels, which is off 16% when compared to the USDA numbers. Farm futures surveyed more than 1,150 farmers this summer online to gather its numbers. The USDA will update its crop production numbers next Monday when it's releasing the August WASDE report, and Pro Farmer will host its popular crop tour later this month. And finally, in our last national story, in the American Angus Association's new documentary, Losing Ground, a new study from the American Farmland Trust, Farms Under Threat, The State of American Farmland, shows just how much farmland is being lost to urbanization. Bob Cervera has this report.
American Farmland Trust President and CEO John Piotti discusses the comprehensive assessment of U.S. land use, which identifies farm and ranch land loss.
We're actually losing farmland almost twice as fast as we thought before. And the numbers are 1.5 million acres a year, 175 acres every hour, so 3 acres a minute in essence. That's more land than we thought. And it is alarming. It should be alarming. Some loss of farmland is inevitable, but that level is simply unsustainable.
With almost a billion total acres of U.S. farmland, it's easy for some people to overlook losing 31 million acres over the last 20 years.
If you think of it that way, 30 million out of a billion, that's 3%. It doesn't sound that alarming, right? But it is. First off, we are losing our best land fastest. Much of our really good land is close to urban locations, and that's the land that we have lost the fastest and continue to lose. Point two is we don't have the luxury of losing even 3% of our land over a period of time, because we basically need that land now. And as population grows, we're going to need it even more.
Piotti points out that some of the best farmland in the world is within striking distance of Chicago, a major U.S. metropolis where urban development continues to encroach toward rural areas. In that particular region, the shelf life of farmland is on the decline.
Farmers were talking about their land as, quote, transitional land. We know this is going to be developed. We're just figuring out how to keep it in farming for the next 5 or 8 or 10 years until that inevitably happens. And the problem with that mindset is farmers are then not investing in the future, and it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You're not maintaining your buildings or your land in the way you could because you think you're going to be out of business, and then it probably means that even if those circumstances that would have driven you out of business are not on their own occurring, you're not in a good position to have a vibrant operation going forward.
Piotti says that development is still an important foundation for prosperous communities, so striking a balance between development and conservation is key. However, there are certain instances where the balance factor should be overlooked.
There are crops in California that can be grown there and a few other places around the world, and that is it, just because of the truly unique climate, soils, whole host of different things. So those should be in our scopes, really, as being so, so important to protect. There's no reason we should ever have a housing development on land that is so precious and globally important. To date, we're not yet seeing the realities of California agriculture quite that way. We're still talking about maybe a balance between development and farming. There are some places where a balance doesn't make sense. When you have amazing land, which is one of the few places in the world where you can grow certain crops, balance is not the answer. The answer is that land needs to be forever available for those opportunities.
Cultural conservation easements is one tool that can be used to protect farmland against development.
The beauty of agricultural conservation easements is, first off, they can be tailored to the specific needs of a landowner, and second, they're completely voluntary. So they only get used when a landowner wants it to be put on its farm. But when it happens, it's an amazing thing because, first off, it makes sure that that land will forever be available for farming. But second, it does something which is so critical, which is it ensures that that land is going to be available in the future at an affordable price.
For an in-depth look at the urbanization of America's farmland, view the American Angus Association's new documentary, Losing Ground, on the Angus TV YouTube channel. For the American Angus Association, I'm Bob Cervera.
Moving on now into State of Illinois Ag News, we have the latest crop progress and condition reports from last week. So for that, we'll join Mark Sloysener with the National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
Illinois was dry again with temperatures that were slightly below normal last week. Most locations were 1 to 2 degrees below average. Rainfall totals were below normal all around Illinois last week, with a statewide average of nearly 4-tenths of an inch of rain. That compares to 8-tenths of an inch normally. There was an average of 6.7 days suitable for field work, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 13% very short, 44 short, 41 adequate, and 2% surplus, which is drier than 1 week ago. Growing degree days accumulated since May 1st continue to be above average in all but northern parts of the state. Corn silking has now reached 81% of acres. That compares to 100% 1 year ago and 97% for the 5-year average. Corn in the dough stage reached 29% and is also well behind normal progress, which is 58% for the 5-year average. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 22% very poor to poor, 37% fair, and 41% good to excellent, a decline from 1 week ago. The soybean crop is now blooming on 72% of acres compared to 95% last year and 90% normally. 30% of acres are setting pods compared to 66% normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 24% very poor to poor, 36% fair, and 40% good to excellent, also a decline from last week. Moving over to hay, the second cutting of alfalfa hay is 88% finished, compared to 96% normally. And the third cutting of alfalfa is 29% finished, compared to 33% normally. Pasture conditions were rated 19% very poor to poor, 44% fair, and 37% good to excellent, a little worse than 1 week ago. This has been Mark Sloysener with the Heartland Region Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
In other news from the USDA, there's been 7 counties in Illinois that have been authorized for emergency haying and grazing use of eligible Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP, acreage outside of the normal primary nesting season. Emergency haying is permitted from August 2nd through August 31st, and emergency grazing is permitted through September 30th. Haying is restricted to no more than 50% of eligible CRP contract acreage, and grazing use shall leave 25% of each field or contiguous field ungrazed or graze 100% of a field, but not at more than a 75% stocking rate. Producers can use the eligible CRP acreage under the emergency grazing provision for their own livestock or may grant another producer to use the eligible CRP acreage. The CRP acreage is limited to acres located within the approved county. There will be no CRP annual rental payment reduction for 2019 emergency haying and grazing authorizations. One of those counties are in our immediate WSMI listening area, and that's Morgan County in the Jacksonville area. The other 6 counties are in northwestern Illinois and include Bureau, Fulton, Henry, Mercer, Rock Island, and Whiteside counties. And if you're a producer in the area of around Morgan County, you can contact their FSA office for more information at 217-243-1535. In other state ag news, with the state fair coming up on Thursday, John Sullivan is set to preside over his first state fair as the director of the Department of Agriculture. He He's looking forward to showing off the renovated Coliseum, which has undergone over $10 million in improvements.
I tell you what, there's just so much excitement. Obviously, we here at the Department of Ag and the folks associated with the fair are very excited about it, but everywhere I go, I mean, just almost without exception, as I mentioned earlier, been traveling around the state and everybody, you know, brings up the Coliseum. So it's remarkable. It looks amazing. The crew, the construction crew, and then our crew after they completed their work has just been working almost around the clock getting everything ready. But I'm really looking forward to having events in there. Of course, the Sale of Champions is going to be in there on Tuesday evening of Ag Day as well. So just really excited about it.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony is planned for Friday, August 9th at 10 a.m. Also being held at the State Fair on Friday evening will be the 20th Annual Master Showmanship Contest hosted by the Illinois Farm Bureau and the RFD Radio Network. 4-H youth who have won Master Showmanship at their local county division will have the opportunity to compete in the Master Showmanship Contest. The contestants will show beef, swine, and sheep, competing to be named the State Master Showman. Their placings will be determined by their ability to handle the livestock and answer questions posed by the judges about each species. 2019 is the 20th year for this annual contest, which was started by the Illinois Farm Broadcasters. The Master Showmanship Contest was created to recognize hardworking and successful youth, and the competition provides an occasion for 4-H youth to compete at a state level. Then on Saturday evening at the State Fair, more than 100 animals will fill the Coliseum to vie for grand champion of their respective species at the State Fair. Selected exhibitors will bring a variety of animals, including goats, sheep, pigs, and cattle, to the Parade of Champions. In the end, the best of Illinois livestock will be crowned, and those exhibitors will have the opportunity to participate in the Governor's Sale of Champions on Tuesday, August 13th. Fairgoers are invited to visit these animals on Sunday and congratulate the respective exhibitors at the Hall of Champions, which will be located in the 25Q Barn on Central Avenue. For more information on all things Illinois State Fair, you can visit illinoisstatefair.info. Now moving on to local ag news, we'll talk about the 135th Annual Old Settlers Celebration to go on in downtown Hillsboro today and tomorrow. With local ag events going on at this year's Old Settlers, we'll talk with Aaron Kistner of the Hillsboro FFA chapter.
We're actually going to have the pork patty stand where we're selling, of course, pork patties. And we're selling chips and drinks. So if you're ever thirsty or need a snack, come to the FFA booth.
And Aaron, where's your stand going to be at this year?
It's going to be by the Moose Lodge, right across the street from Sweet Addictions.
And finally, I also spoke with President Wesley Stockstill, who talks about a pork raffle that they will be doing at Old Settlers running through the homecoming football game.
So this spring, me and Mr. Gallion, along with his brother, we went up near Jacksonville to go buy two hogs, and right now those hogs are currently being raised at South 40 Farms. They're about 150 pounds right now, so at our homecoming football game, we will auction them off. One of the hogs is mine to keep, and the other one we will auction off two halves, and those will go off to our two lucky winners at our homecoming football game.
And all that proceeds, of course, goes right back to FFA, right?
Of course. All the proceeds go back to the FFA.
And again, that was Porter Aaron Kistner and President Wesley Stockstill of the Hillsboro FFA chapter. And finally, in other Old Settlers news, parade parking for the big parade Thursday evening for horses will be in the grass lot between the Hillsboro Junior High and the high school at the corner of Chase and Summer Street. Classes being judged in the horse show division of Old Settlers will be the best of show, best costume, and the most unique coat or markings. Any questions can be directed to Farm Bureau Manager Katie Wilson at 532-6171. And the Montgomery County Farm Bureau Young Leaders Meeting will be held on Thursday evening at 5:30. They'll be meeting at the Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro to load up popcorn and line up for the Old Settlers Parade. Any business for the August meeting will be discussed during parade lineup. And remember, as always, if you have any ag news for the morning or afternoon farm shows, You can email that to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Wednesday morning, August 7th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.